This is the Education Gadfly Show.
You're saying you'd rather listen to something other than classic rock?
I'm just saying, I thought in Wisconsin they believed in choice, home of the voucher program, but no, nothing.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, the crashing parachutist of the education policy community, Michael Brickman.
Great to be here.
So, Michael, we had this interesting news this week from Wisconsin.
Yeah, there was quite a video that went viral of some parachutists who managed to get out alive. Their planes collided in, I think it was Superior, Wisconsin, so way northwest Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And luckily they all got out alive. So that's the good news. The bad news in Wisconsin right now is the ongoing saga of Aaron Rodgers, and he's the Packers quarterback. If people don't know that, apparently that's unknown to some people around here. But
and you know, Brickman, I should say, even though it was unknown to me, even though I want you to know that I was in Green Bay just last week. That is right. I was driving around Brickman's home state of Wisconsin. I was fogged into Wausau, Wisconsin, where I had testified on the Common Core, had to drive to Green Bay. And, you know, look, stereotypes, you know, have some truth to them. Where did I drive through Wisconsin? I saw beautiful dairy farms and I listened to a lot of classic rock.
Did you eat cheese curds?
No, because they're disgusting. Are you kidding me? I've had people send me cheese curds before. They're terrible. But I will say it was interesting in Wisconsin. That is the only kind of radio station you can get classic rock. And I've not listened to that much Boston in a long time. But I enjoyed it. It brought me back to my 80s days, my middle school days.
You're saying you'd rather listen to something other than classic rock?
I'm just saying, I thought in Wisconsin they believed in choice, home of the voucher program. But no, nothing. You couldn't get, if you wanted country pop, NPR, nope. Not between Wausau and Green Bay. One choice, classic rock. Anyway, all right, lots to talk about here, Brickman. That parachuter thing was pretty amazing, pretty cool. I guess you get credit for this, even though, you know, crashing the plane isn't so cool. But I guess if you're able to crash the plane and get out alive, that's not bad. Do you think they did it on purpose? Was this all just like a publicity stunt?
I'm going to go with no. A lot of the videos on the internet seem fake. I'm going to say that one, not so much.
All right. Okay. You know, it's not fake. Pardon the gadfly. Boom. Pamela, get us started.
In this week's Gadfly Weekly, Checkerfin declared that the education agenda of Bill de Blasio, mayor-elect of New York City, is 20% okay and 80% hot air. What's the breakdown?
Yeah. Well, so Checker, as like most of us reformers, not super hopeful about the Bill de Blasio era. He has been attacking charter schools particularly, and he's big on preschool, which, you know, isn't all bad. But what's your take, Brickman? What's he get right? What's he get wrong?
Yeah, I mean, if it's 80% hot air and he hasn't even been elected yet, that's kind of worrisome. And that's...
Well, now, by the time people are listening to this, we assume that he has been elected in a low voter turnout election in New York.
Yeah, and I think all we've heard so far, though, and all we'll hear until he takes office are the fluffy appeal to everybody type things. And, he definitely got support from the unions and other anti-reform groups that are going to be pushing for reversing a lot of the changes that Bloomberg made. Bloomberg not so popular in some circles based on certain issues, but I think his presence on education reform is definitely going to be missed.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, of course, the big question is going to be, who is he going to hire as chancellor? And that's going to tell us a lot about his intentions and how much he does want to roll back the Bloomberg reforms versus maybe hit a couple of these issues like the charter school co-locations that he's talked a lot about. He's going to have to figure out this massive system, a million kids. How much are you going to centralize? How much do you decentralize? You know, Bloomberg himself went back and forth on that in a couple of ways. And he's got to figure out on Common Core. You know, what is he going to do to try to implement these new standards to make that sync up with teacher evaluations? A lot of things going on. I still think the conventional wisdom is saying Andres Alonso for chancellor. I think that's probably for good reason. I think he'd be a pretty good pick. I guess we'll find out in coming days and weeks if that's the direction he's going in. Okay, topic number two.
In response to a growing backlash to the Common Core in his state, Florida Governor Rick Scott decided to review the standards, which triggered an outpouring of comments, suggestions, and criticisms. More than 19,000 were filed with the Florida Department of Education before they stopped accepting comments last Thursday. What's the political outlook in Florida?
So, Brickman, first of all, I'm curious. I mean, you served for Governor Walker in Wisconsin. When you have this kind of letter writing campaign, do people take this seriously? I mean, do they care? Like, oh, you know, was it, you know, 1,000 in favor of the standards and 18,000 opposed? Does that make a difference?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Even if it's like form letters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Generated on the internet?
Even if it's form letters generated on the internet.
With poor grammar, spelling. Do you care about spelling in these sorts of letters?
We would always spell check. No. No, I mean, it does matter to elected officials. And that's something I think I've brought up before is, you know, you get a 2-to-1 support or opposed on any issue, even if it's 10 letters for, you know, maybe not for a governor, but for a state legislator, that makes a difference. Cause really in most issues, not that many people actually make the phone call, write the letter, send the email. And I'm sure the vast majority, I mean, let's say a fair share of the 19,000 are probably going to be, things that you can't do a lot with. It's going to be generically, I support the Common Core or I don't support the Common Core.
Right.
I think you'll have to probably dig in there a little bit to get some substantive things you can use. But where's this split? I think that's going to be really interesting.
All right. Well, let's talk about the politics here in Florida, right? So you've got Rick Scott, who is a Tea Party guy and has been dancing around on this issue, as many Republicans have been. It's a very difficult issue for Republicans. They don't want to be in a fight with their base on the same level. Many of the Republicans you suspect actually support the Common Core, at least the idea of higher standards. Now it looks like he's going to be going up against Charlie Crist, former Republican, then independent, now Democrat, running for governor against him. Charlie Crist supports the Common Core. So, what do you think? I mean, how does this political calculus play out in an issue like this?
Hard to say. I mean, I think on the one hand, you could see this waiting until after the election. I'm not sure if there will be enough of a push in this upcoming session to really do something radical, but you never know. I mean, I think there are definitely forces in Florida that are behind the Common Core 100%.
Yeah. I mean, if you're Rick Scott, for example, and you know, Florida is a competitive state. This is not a red state. It's a purple state, right? Charlie Crist is, you know, popular guy. You could imagine him winning, right? So, I mean, at this point, does Rick Scott think I've got to really find ways to run towards the center? John Kasich is doing that in Ohio. You see that in a few other states, or does he have to just totally double down on his base?
I think it's really a tough one because you probably want to take the issue off the table if you can, because most people support the Common Core. Though the people who are going to be making the phone calls and helping get out the vote for Governor Scott and his reelect, a lot of them don't support the Common Core and are pretty fired up about it right now. So, hopefully it is not the biggest issue. I think people down there are probably a lot more focused on the economy and jobs than Common Core. But to a certain small group of people, at least 19,000 people, they're pretty fired up about it.
You assume that's 19,000 people. I mean, you don't know how many of those were written by robots. I mean, let's make it clear. There could have been a lot of robot letters.
Robot takeover in Florida. That's the new Corespiracy.
Exactly. Okay, Pamela, topic number three.
Mike, in your final contribution to Bridging Differences, you outlined your first cut of an anti-poverty strategy. You've gotten pushback, particularly for your assertion that it's mostly not about money. Can you clarify what you mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I've been writing with Deborah Meyer about this question about the relationship between poverty and education. And I'm particularly interested in this question of how do we help low-income kids growing up in poverty, especially kids spending a significant portion of their childhood in poverty. How do we help those kids transcend their childhood and be able to succeed and get into the middle class as adults? When you dig into this literature, what you find is that in America, at least, which is a relatively, wealthy society, right? And where even poor people in America, are not living in a sort of, we're not talking about Rwanda kind of conditions, right? I mean, people in America, even poor people, have the basic necessities generally. I mean, kids starving and all that kind of stuff, incredibly rare, thankfully. I mean, we are a generous country. We don't want that to allow that to happen to kids. And the question is, why is it that poor children tend to do worse in school? And is it the money or the lack thereof, that the parents don't have the money to, you know, buy them the educational games or to the enrichment activities. And what you find is, while that may make some difference on the margins, mostly that's not the difference. The difference is that most poor kids have these other things in common, like mothers who tend to be very young and who got pregnant when they were young and when before they finished their high school education, who are not very successful in the labor market, you know, who have not have a steady employment. I mean, this is why they are poor, is they're struggling single mothers. And that it's those sorts of things, having a, you know, a mother trying to work and raise kids, a mother who maybe has limited verbal skills herself, you know, fathers who are nowhere to be seen, all of those kinds of issues. Of course, I mean, much more complicated than that, but it's those kinds of issues that are most likely depressing the achievement of low-income kids. So it's, you know, if it was just about the money, we could say, all right, let's just go back to a cash welfare system and just give, you know, families with kids money, you know, here, let's just get their incomes up over the poverty level, problem solved. Most likely that would not do much good because it wouldn't fundamentally change the dynamics of what's going on inside those families.
Absolutely. I think you're right on. And it's important that you're bringing up some of these points, Mike, because, you know, we talk about this. There's often this debate of, well, is it poverty that really matters? Is it the nature of the schools that really matters? And there's some who almost suggest that we need to just give up on trying to make the schools better because that's not going to make a difference until we fix poverty.
Right.
And that's ridiculous. We need to definitely address both.
Yeah.
But fix the problems we can fix in the education system. Certainly that by itself is not going to solve poverty. But we're not reaching our potential in our education system yet either.
Yep.
And so we need to do that while simultaneously looking at some of these anti-poverty programs, many of which are abject failures. Yep. They've been around for generations, literally, and have done nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's definitely a way to, as you suggest in some of your writing, Mike, be compassionate and help some of these people, not just talk about taking away poor people's benefits, but actually fix these problems and fix the issue of dependency so we can actually break the cycle of poverty.
Yeah. And to be thoughtful about, you know, what kind of schools actually could help propel kids growing up in poverty into the middle class. And, you know, I think even in the reform movement, we have been lazy about that question, or at least we have quickly assumed that it's got to be college prep. You know, I mean, that has been the most obvious answer. If we could just get poor kids through college, they will enter the middle class. And generally, that's true. If you can get a low-income kid through college, they will enter the middle class. That's almost guaranteed. The problem is our success rate at doing that is incredibly low. Right. And so, you know, putting all of our eggs in that basket is not smart. We've got to find other pathways to the middle class that don't necessarily involve 4 years of college. And I, you know, I'm much more enthusiastic about some of the high quality career and technical programs, for example, than I used to. And just finding different ways. I mean, the main thing that we got to help teenagers understand is if you don't want to be poor, you know, you got to follow the success sequence. You know, and this is now my obsession. You know, it's finish your education, then get a job, then get married, then start a family. You know, and if you do those things, you will not be poor. Your children will not be poor. And, you know, just thinking about what can schools do to encourage kids following that success sequence, I think there probably are some things and some things that we really haven't talked much about in the education reform movement. All right. That is all the time we've got, though. We can't talk about these. You know, you can't just go on and talk about poverty all day, Michael, because that is a long topic. But that is all the time that we have for this topic and for Pardon the Gadfly. Thanks for playing, Brickman. Thank you, Pamela. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
Notice anything different, Amber?
Yeah, you're looking a little more follically challenged.
Follically, I think the phrase is follically defeated.
Defeated, okay,
defeated.
Right.
So this is, you know, an audio podcast. By the way, Joe, when are we going to start the video podcast? All right, work on that. All right, anyways, you can't tell out there, folks, but I now have no hair.
Well, buzz cut. It's
buzz cut.
More than a buzz cut. It's like I see some black there, dark, but yeah, it's just a little fuzz.
Yeah, so I've decided, you know, look, I always have had this fear of being one of those guys with a comb over in his middle age. And so I just refused to be that guy.
Gotcha.
So I just went for it, you know, and just, you know, we just shaved it all off.
Yes. Just go to scorched earth.
Scorched earth. That's right.
We're all
sometimes
waiting.
You have to destroy the village in order to save it, Michael. So this is that's the approach of this haircut.
We're just waiting to see if your kids are scared of you tonight. We're all I know. On
well,
pins and needles
I'll
about
I'll let
that.
You know next week. Yes. How they I've been hinting at this. I've been trying to foreshadow it for them, but
right. Like that's
maybe I should just wear a baseball cap. Yeah, I've been saying. I've been thinking about shaving my head. And they were against it, I will say.
Okay. But were there reasons?
Why they didn't like it? They just, you know, kids don't like change. Yeah. So, but you know what? You cannot let 3-year-olds and 6-year-olds make these kinds of decisions for you, I have found. There are some decisions that are okay to let
But your
make.
Wife can. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, yes. Okay.
Yeah, all
What you got for
what
us, Amber?
What you got for us? A new study out by NBER, just on an NBER track here, examines whether having an early retirement incentive impacts student achievement. This is a great study.
And who found it for you, Amber?
I know. I think you might have found it for me.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you. Ever since I cut my hair, I just these ideas, they just pop
right,
out.
Right. But so did you read easier. It? Did you read it? Maybe a little bit.
I read the, what did I read about
the
it?
The abstract or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. Anyway. All right. Studies a 2-year early retirement policy in Illinois that allowed teachers to retire early in 1992, 93, or 93, 94. They nicknamed it 5.5, meaning that if you were at least 50 years old, you could purchase an extra 5 years of age, which is crazy, and experience to be counted as credible service toward your retirement benefit. The key point was you had to retire immediately. This led to Illinois losing 10% of its teachers over that 2-year span, the bulk of whom were experienced. Analysts studied the scores of 3rd, 6th, and 8th grade teachers. There were about 55,000 of them. Bottom line, they found that the incentive did not reduce test scores and instead led to increased student achievement in most cases. Further, they calculate that the median teacher retired 5 years earlier than expected because of the incentive. They make a bunch of assumptions about how much it's going to cost to replace the veteran teachers with the novice, how much it costs the district to make the lump salary payments for the additional years. Summed across the 8,000 teachers who took up the program, the incentive resulted in total savings to Illinois districts of over $550 million. Yet, in those who study pension research like wonks around here know that the teachers are obviously going to receive more pension benefits for more years than if they'd retired early. But in Illinois, it's the state that picks up the tab, not the district. So the median incentivized retiree received about $116,000 of increased benefits from early retirement. Then they do all these other calculations accounting for district, teacher lump, payments, so on and so forth. So basically, they found that the total cost to state's taxpayers, the sum of the net benefit to districts and the net payment to the pension fund, is approximately $92 million. So it represented a cost per student of $51 to the taxpayer. So, I mean, what they say is, yeah, it might have saved the district some money by reducing mm-hmm. teacher wages, mm-hmm. but the state was on the hook. And the analyst said, and guess what? By the way, we don't think lawmakers understood this at all.
Yeah, you don't say. Oh, my gosh. So I could see you getting visibly upset, Brickman, and that does not happen often. Okay. I mean, Mr. Unflappable over here. What this, right. this you don't like this idea of basically just putting putting off all these costs onto the state.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable when you look at some of the decisions that are made and how they just pass the buck
totally
year after
believable,
year.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally believable.
Wow, they've got the worst, I think if you look at some studies, the worst pension system in the country in Illinois. They can't pay their bills. They're running out of gimmicks to defer costs off to the future. Future is here.
Yeah.
And they're kind of screwed.
Yeah, no, look, this is classic. Look, in some ways you could say clever government behavior that, you know, one government trying to put these costs on another government. Look, I think we're going to see something similar with Obamacare if they ever figure out how to make these websites work. That you could imagine if I'm a school district, why do I keep paying for retiree health care, you know, for these teachers between 55 and 65? If I can now say, hey, look, why don't you just go on to the exchanges and you can purchase that health care yourself? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll even give you some stipend in, you know, a flat rate, but I'm not going to take responsibility anymore. So in other words, local districts can offload that onto the feds and onto the states. Now, so there's all those interesting questions, but let's not forget this. What this is showing is that many of these teachers who are 5 years from retirement, who clearly would like to retire because they took the incentive, the student achievement went up because they went away.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're burned out and you're only hanging in there because of the golden handcuffs, guess what? You suck.
Right. But it could be that low achieving teachers are just more apt to take advantage. The study can't tell us that, Mike, but
No, I know that it's not just it's not to say that all older teachers suck. It's that the older teachers who would be willing to take this incentive are burned out, right? I mean, and so it's great to have these. This is the worst part about these pension systems, in my opinion, is that, and just the way it distorts human potential. And I mean, to have these people who are hanging in there for years. And we've all known these teachers.
Oh, we know them. Yep.
And you can't blame them. You're talking about like $1 million of pension wealth in some cases that are on the line here. So they have to hang in there.
And the whole school knows it.
And everybody knows it, but they're done. They're just done. You know? And I mean, again, they've been teaching for 25, 30, I mean, you know, a long time, right?
That's right.
Let our people go is what I say. Let my people go.
All right, Moses.
All right. Well, I have a little bit of a complex. Was he bald? Was that, do we know? No, you always picture him with a lot of hair.
He was a mover and a shaker. And so
Charleston Heston had a lot of hair.
It's an apt comparison.
Yeah, mover and a shaker. One great you could say.
Are you going to go with the full beard in honor of the your socks?
My socks.
Substitute the facial hair?
You know, I was a St. Louis Cardinals fan. Thank you very much, but perhaps I will. But all right, Amber. Well, what's your take on this? I mean, look, my own view is we should be finding ways for more districts to do these early retirements, right?
Yeah. I mean, we should. But I mean, if the state's going to be on the hook for paying it, hello, well, there's a problem here. I mean, man, oh man, it's just catastrophe after catastrophe in terms of how these things are set up.
Yep. No, and you see that this is where the fights are, and that when you get in these super wonky fights around pensions, and you hear about cost sharing, and you hear about this is happening in Maryland and Illinois, all kinds of different places where the state lawmakers have woken up to this, and they're saying, "Hey, districts, we're gonna stop paying the whole bill here for pensions." You understand why that is?
Yeah, but of course, you know, then we say, "Oh, no, that's against the law. These things are baked in, and this is statute." Yeah, so,
this is not easy. All right, great paper. You know, should we just call this Amber's MBER minute?
Yeah. It's becoming that way sometimes, isn't it?
We love those. We love those
good
economists.
Stuff. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Great stuff.
Great stuff. But, you know, I have a soft spot for a sociologist, too, sometimes. So maybe you can look for something there.
It's just they just don't publish that in NBR papers.
No.
Understandably so.
Yeah, I guess so.
And there's no NSER. Yeah, what would that acronym be? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. They're too busy out there marching and, you know, Occupy
Fixing
Wall Street.
Fixing the achievement gap.
Protests and things. All right. Thank you. That's all the time we've got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Michael Brickman.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.